Talking with TD. Touchdown Tennessee. The latest on the Two Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, Teron.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, you are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We are in the building officially. Got David James over here.
Yes, sir.
Making it happen. We're going to have Jameson Hensley, ESPN NFL Nation Ravens reporter. He will be checking in from London. We got Chris Sanders, Talking Shop, Run TMC. You know how we do, man. This show continues, and it's been a great opportunity to talk shop with you guys each and every week. We're going to keep it rolling, and I want to look back on the game this past week. And, wow, it was a tough loss for the Titans. It's one that they truly had in their hands. You got the ball at the five-yard line. It's fourth and one. Derrick Henry gets stopped. Yikes. And that was the big problem. The red zone. Red zone efficiency. I mean, they had four visits. They came away with one touchdown. They were close on their first visit. Derrick Henry, DeAndre Hopkins, it was just a little overthrown, and Hopkins couldn't get his feet, his one foot down. He got one down, but he couldn't get the other, and it was ruled incomplete. And I want to start there with Hopkins, because I think if you find a way to get him involved more in the red zone, I think they'll score. Now, obviously, there's going to be situations where other guys are going to be open, and, you know, but I think you really need to scheme up ways to get Hopkins the football in the red zone. And you look at this past game, when you talk about scheming up ways to get Hopkins the football, he lined up in the backfield a couple times. And the one, he ran a seam route in the red zone. The other one, he actually ran one of those circle routes out of the backfield. He hooked up and Tannehill hit him. And I think you're seeing him, Hopkins that is, get moved around a lot across the formation. And this is something that Tim Kelly did when they were together in Houston. In fact, his snaps, if I remember correctly, in the slot almost doubled, while his overall snaps reduced by like 100. So, let you know that the intention is there to get him the ball, but they need to dial up more of these plays in the red zone, because Hopkins is, I mean, you look at the way, actually, David, that catch he had on the boundary, I think it was like a, I forget how many yards it was, but he made a superb catch along. Now, I remember watching like, wow, he just went up and snatched that. He was running, and the ball was over. So he was kind of expecting it. Like, I don't know how he was expecting it, but for some reason, like, it caused him to turn, and he turned towards the sideline, and he went up and snapped the ball out of the air and then got his feet down. I was like, this dude is one of the best boundary receivers in the league. And he still has it. I was impressed by that. But the other thing that I wanted to look at is just how that chemistry that he and Ryan Tannehill have is developing. And there was a play where Hopkins ran a curl route or a sit route, however you want to describe it. But he settled into a window that was supposed to be there. And Tannehill looked at him, and then the pocket started to get a little muddy, and Tannehill moved slightly. That pocket movement that a lot of people have been saying isn't there for him was there on this play. He moved slightly to the right. Hopkins was able to uncover, move with him, and they connected for, I think it was like a 12 or 14-yard gain, but it moved the chains. That, to me, is an example of the progress that relationship is making. I asked Ryan Tannehill that very question. Here's what he had to say.
That relationship, being on the same page, comes with time, comes with reps, and felt, we were in a good spot going into the season, and it's only grown as we've had, hundreds of more reps throughout practice and games as well.
What would you say is the next step, like, of progress in that relationship you guys have?
We don't got to do anything totally different. Just keep on the path that we're on. You know, that chemistry is going to continue to grow and build as we move throughout the season and take advantage of those opportunities where maybe it's not exactly drawn up on paper the way that it ends up, but we're able to take advantage of some space and create a play.
What's the impression?
That's exactly what he's talking about as far as being on the same page, right? You know, a play is not drawn up the way it ends up happening, but it's still a positive gain. I think that's a good thing, and you're going to continue to see that. And that's a part of how that red zone offense could get better. And they obviously need to touch that up. I haven't checked to see where they're ranked now, but entering last week, they were 29th in the red zone as far as on scoring touchdowns inside the 20. I'll check that in a moment. Another thing that we do have to look at is, and you know, in fact, we'll get into that. I'll get into that with Chris Sanders. We'll talk about Tajay Spears and Derrick Henry. That'll be one of the main things we'll talk about. I think that'll be good, especially considering how much has been said about what Chris Sanders thinks about, you know, Spears as well as Henry. We'll get into that next. And looking at this, they're still 29th. So it went down from 38% to 35% visits in the red zone. They're scoring touchdowns. Either way, it's not good. You look at the Ravens and their offense is third, a very typical Tennessee Titan-like red zone performance with 72%. That stretch, you know, with Arthur Smith and then that 1 year with Todd Downing, not last year, but the first year, they were in the 70s that they were scoring. Now, you look at the defense, it's a little bit tougher. And that is something that's going to, you know, be an issue for this Titans offense because, I mean, you talk about red zone touchdown-wise percentage doesn't get much better than the Ravens. In fact, they're number one at 25%. So exactly what you saw the Titans do against the Colts is what the Ravens are making everybody do this year, 25%, you know. So it has to get better. It does, and that's an area for improvement. And this game is going to be interesting. So the thing that really intrigues me is you got two different schools of thought. The Ravens, they are leaving early. They left early. They left, and we'll get into this more with Jameson Hensley when we have him on. But the Ravens left on Monday to get to London. Now, the Titans, they left Thursday after practice. And I thought it was pretty cool just how they've talked about some of the things that, you know, they experienced last time. A lot of the guys said it was important for them to sleep on the plane. You know, I talked to Kevin Byard and he said, you sleep on the plane, but then it's probably best for you to try to stay up as much as you can. And then that will balance that schedule out for you. I was intrigued by that because it's like a 5 hour, like that's a big time difference, you know. And we were talking about it, David, right? Like we're watching the game at 8:30, you know, so it's a whole different situation. Tannehill, he said, man, you can't think about it. I think that was a good point that he made, that you cannot think about it. You have to just go ahead and, you know, go. And that's what he said he plans to do. Now, Tannehill has played there. This would be his fourth time playing in London. And, you know, Jeffrey Simmons had a funny quote also. He said, in regards to sleeping on the plane, he was like, man, I got to make sure I'm not near any big guy. And also Arden, because I know Arden, I just look at him and could tell he snores. So there's going to be a lot going on as far as the guys trying to get their sleep. And that's something that you have to do. And it's a big adjustment. It's a tough adjustment. The playing surface is another interesting feature. You look last week, the Bills, Matt Milano, non-contact injury. You know, he's gone for the year. And then you look at Teron Johnson. He had an injury also, but he was okay. He came out of it all right. I think it's just intriguing just how the NFL is doing this. You know, the Jaguars were in London for back-to-back games. And then you had a Buffalo team. Now, they said that, you know, there were definitely fatigue and issues with them being able to come out firing and do the things that they need to do from the rip. I'm just curious how it's going to be as far as that comparison for the Ravens and the Titans. Because, you know, the Ravens, Jim Harbaugh said the plan was to go out there and sleep six nights. That's the plan. That's what they're doing. The Titans, it's a different situation. And I mean, Baltimore, like, they took it seriously. They took it, and I'm not saying the Titans didn't take it seriously. Don't get me wrong, but I'm talking about the travel part of it is something that they seem to have been very alarmed about from their first visit. Titans didn't have any issues, obviously, as far as the score was concerned. Like Mike Vrabel said, if there's one thing that he would have done different, it would have been to get the two-point conversion, to convert it, you know, obviously. But, you know, it was a one-point game. Vrabel joked about – he said that because I asked him about the guys falling asleep in meetings or anything like that, and he joked that, you know, wasn't the case. But he said, I mean, I'm not so sure that's not the case here, guys falling asleep in meetings. But, you know, they didn't have any real big issues. I'm curious if the Ravens did and if that's what made them want to have this early arrival in London. I'll definitely make sure that we get Jameson to speak on that. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting situation, man. I wonder, and I keep using this word interesting because that is exactly interesting and intriguing. I want to see how this plays out, you know, because there's other factors that you have to weigh into that. And one of them is the progression that Lamar Jackson has made as a passer. There was a play where he started to scramble and he stopped. Now, Zay Flowers, we talked about Hopkins uncovering. Zay Flowers did the same thing, and Zay Flowers was on the right, and Lamar Jackson was rolling to the left, and he started to scramble, then he stopped, and Flowers moved into his line of vision, and Lamar stopped and just uncorked the laser, and it was like a 20-yard gain. That's an example of how Lamar Jackson has progressed as a passer, but don't listen to me. Let's hear what Mike Vrabel had to say.
Well, you just see such a calm, confident, relaxed player. I mean, not to say that he's completed every pass that he's thrown, but he doesn't look rushed or hurried in the pocket. Staying in there a little bit, you just look at Pittsburgh, for example. They brought a blitz zero, didn't necessarily complete it, but he didn't panic and fly out of there. He kind of stood in there and tried to deliver the pass. And you see a comfortable player who is still talented wherever he has the football.
There you have it right there. That's an excellent explanation, and he is right. You definitely see the calmness. Yeah, it's going to be a game, and it's a game that, man, the Titans go 2-4. They could be in some trouble, but Kevin Byard, he mentioned, you know, look, we went 2-4 in 2019 and ended up in the AFC Championship game. I thought that was a good point that Byard made. So, yeah, we'll see. 2-4, 3-3. 3-3 sounds better to me, but nevertheless, here we are. We're looking at the Ravens at 3-2. The Titans at 2-3. It's a ball game, and we know that history. This team has history with the Ravens, you know, dating back before the AFC South, you know, back when they were in the same division, and you had Ray Lewis against Eddie George, and, you know, so on and so forth. So anyone going across the pond, enjoy the game. I know it's going to be an awesome atmosphere, a great environment. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Run TMC.
For you, fresh. Yeah. As the music fades, the lights dim. To you live from the Meadowlands in New Jersey for your New Jersey Nets at Power Forward from Hampton University, number 44, Rick Mahorn.
And now, singing Caribbean Queen, Billy Ocean. Caribbean Queen, she's staring your family. Don't hold time. What's cracking, man?
Hey, nothing, man. Another day in paradise, I must
say. Yes, what's up?
You know.
Before we start, man, shout out to you for coming to the game last week, man, and watching the receivers, man. I appreciate you on the sideline, man. Nah. That was good stuff. Appreciate you coming out, boss.
That was fun, man. I couldn't help but get involved with a couple of drills. You know, I couldn't help myself. You know, but yeah, I appreciate the invite, man.
Congrats on the win.
That was a big W right there.
Dude, it was crazy, man. I mean, you know, we start off a little slow now. We're starting to put it together, man. But, you know, our quarterback's playing well. The receivers are trying to get open, and the running game is doing pretty good. So, yeah, man, we're trying to get this thing together, boss. But what's up with these Titans, boss?
Hey, listen, the Titans might need to look at what's the kid's name that you guys played? Caleb Beasley?
Brooklyn.
Caleb Beasley, they might need to bring him in sometime in the future, man, you know?
Oh, because of the defensive back from Lipscomb?
Yeah.
Stop it, man.
All jokes aside, though,
yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of conversation about Christian Fulton and mm-hmm. what he's going through. I think if you look at it, I mean, the kid, Chris is very talented. He's a talented corner. He's just caught in the funk right now. Yep. How would you handle that as a coach?
I mean, what I would do is, because a lot of times this is a sensitive area, because you got to remember that you know, top athletes are very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it, the one thing you have to do is you got to go to the film and pick out the positives. And I'm not saying coddle him and say, oh, woe is me. No, you need to look at him and pick out the positives so he can see visual of the positives, because right now he's seeing the negative. So as a coach, my job is to build confidence in him. And if you can build confidence, that'll work. And I'm going to give you a perfect example. I remember we were playing my rookie season. We were playing the Chicago Bears, and I was struggling, man. And this is the funny part about it. They named me captain to that game, one of my first games. So I go out there, and I'm nervous, and I'm struggling a little bit. I drop like one or two passes, and my confidence is shot. But this is what I love about Les Decker, one of my favorite wide receiver coaches. He came to me because he saw the sadness on my face and the distraught on my face. He sat me down. He said, Chris, relax. You're going to make plays. You're going to make a play. Just let it come to you. Trust your technique and trust what I taught you. 5 plays later, bomb, touchdown. He came to you. I came back to the sideline. He said, I told you. So the reason why I share that story is that's what the defensive back coach needs to do. He said, you know what? Just trust your technique. Trust what I teach you, and you'll get out of this funk.
Yeah, that's it right there. And it's always revert back to your technique. That's the bottom line. And regardless of the situation, I think when you look at Christian, the thing that I really like that he did after that game, he stood up and he faced the fire. You know, he knew he was going to have questions. And he turned around, and I remember Kevin Byard looked down at him and was like, yeah, you got a crowd. And so he turned around and he was like, y'all ready? And wow. You know, faced the fire. And the other thing, he ended it on a good note. He said,
yes,
I'm going to keep challenging and coming back every week. And that's all that he could do. Is continue to play through it, you know, and that's why I think, because everybody's saying, oh, bench Christian Fulton, bench Christian, Stillman, Jared is on his show talking about that every day this week. You don't do that. He's a talented player. You let him play himself back into form.
You know what? It's kind of like this. I'm glad that you said that, because everybody's, oh, bench him, he's terrible, this and that. He got drafted for a reason now. I mean, he's not no kid that just learned how to play cornerback. But here's what you do. I remember watching a story on Jerry Rice. Do you know did Jerry Rice first year, he was dropping balls out of the wazoo?
Yep.
I mean, they was like, man, we this dude is not going to be any good.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what he did. Here's what he did, and I love this, is he went back to the basics. What's the basics? Let me figure out a way to catch the ball. Let me get on the jug machine. Let me catch 150 balls a day. Let me do things on the sidelines. And guess what? That same guy that dropped all those passes, that same guy that they want to cut, that same guy that said they can't make it in the league, is the best receiver to ever, when I say ever, put on cleats and catch a football. That's Jerry Rice.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. So that's an example. You play through it. And I think, you know, Fulton is going to be fine. They're going to double move him. He's just going to have to give up some of these shorter catches. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. You want to make a play on the ball. You want to, you know, because that's what he does. But he just has to, you're going to have to give up a couple of those to make sure that you don't get out of position on those deep ones. You know what I mean? And just, it's one of those things. Stay over top of the receiver, tackle him, no gain after that. And that's really what it boils down to.
Hey, let me. I want you to the fans, the people listening on this radio. That I'm gonna teach you something real quick. As a defensive back, right? If you get beat, your technique is to what? You gotta grab him.
Yeah.
You rather give up a penalty as opposed to six.
Yeah, spot so foul right there. Yeah.
So he's taught to do that. To where if he gets beat, if he gets a double move and he's beat, I'm grabbing shoulder pads, I'm grabbing face masks because you have a chance to live another down. And that's what we got to understand with the situation that went on when he got double moved. I know he's getting double moved a lot, but if I'm him, I'm going to figure out a way, okay, I got beat. I got to make sure I tackle that, but also I got to read my keys. I got to know the down and this. I got to understand the three-step drop. If the quarterback is doing the pump, I got to read those things. But if you're not dealing with any confidence, you're going to lose your technique. But I think the way he gets his confidence back is he gets in a game and he gets that first interception or that second interception or makes a great play. Then now the confidence builds. But I just think that as a coach and as a staff, you got to be patient with him and let him keep doing what he needs to do.
Yeah. Now speaking of being patient. That's exactly what Zach Moss was in his running style. And
yeah.
I mean, it drew comparisons to Le'Veon Bell from Kevin Byard and Jeffrey Simmons. I thought that was interesting. When you look at that game, though, what was the bottom line with that run defense? I mean, it seemed to struggle badly.
You know, because I went back and watched the film, and I think that the reason why Moss had so many big runs is because the front wasn't getting off blocks.
Yep. Exactly.
And when you can't get off blocks, I mean, there's so many lanes. And if you look at, you know, the whole scheme of everything, when they run the inside zone, outside zone, you know, you got to remember that the offensive line is running to a gap. And once they get into the gap, you know, they're just latching on to somebody who's ever in that gap. And that's exactly what's happened. And then you got Zach Moss, who makes one cut and go, but also physical and hitting the hole. So when you have that situation where the offensive line is playing good, the scheme is good, and you can't get off blocks, that's why he rushed for 165 yards.
Let's get into this Tajay Spears situation, right?
Yeah.
He had to end around 19-yard. I mean, the one thing about him, well, there's two things. Mm-hmm. It's the acceleration, and I still haven't seen the first man bring him down.
Not at all.
You know, it doesn't happen frequently. I'll put it that way. When you look at the usage, right? So I believe he had 31 snaps. Derrick Henry had 34.
Uh-huh.
Henry does need to continue to get the football.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think 20 to 25, I mean, they've won both games where he had at least 20 carries.
Right.
How do you manage that situation?
You know, I mean, I know it's a tough situation. I'm going to give you a perfect example. When Eddie George came in. Eddie George, you know, came in and was the number one pick. I mean, the first pick of the first round. But we had a guy behind him named Rodney Thomas, who was a dog. Rodney Thomas was a dog. I mean, he got close to 1,000 yards. He started, you know, his rookie season he started after the third game. So he was a guy that could make explosive runs. But when he came in, automatically Henry had all the carries. But if we saw that Eddie George was struggling a little bit, then we put Rodney Thomas in and let him carry the load. This is the same situation with Henry and Tajay Spears. Let Henry get his carries, but whoever has the momentum, that's who you need to ride with. I mean, I know it's kind of crazy because we're talking about Henry. He got 2,000 yards, who's a workhorse that, you know, just this physical and powerful runs. But at the end of the day, you got to get the kid that has the momentum at that game, and that may change from game to game.
And that's why they've said the approach is basically a game-to-game situation.
Yes.
You know, and that's why they've said feel the flow of the game. And that's the way it's worked. Now, I'll say this about Tajay Spears. Mm-hmm. He's more sudden than Derrick Henry in that he hits that gear a bit quicker. Now, with Henry, when he hits that gear, he's gone. You know, I will say that, but I think that there is a bit more suddenness with Spears. I'm not saying that he needs to run the ball more than Henry or anything like that. Again, it goes by how the game is going, but I will say the suddenness is absolutely there.
And I want to make myself clear when I say this. I know this going around that I'm saying that Tajay Spears is a better back than Henry. I said no. He's more of an explosive back right now that hits the hole quicker than Henry, and that's not a bad thing. So it's not saying that he's better than Henry. It's just that Tajay Spears gets that next gear and hits that outside zone or end zone quicker than Derrick Henry right now. So I want to make sure I clear that up because a lot of people, how can you say that? And listen, I'm not saying that he's a better back. I'm saying he hits the hole quicker than Derrick Henry.
Yeah, no, and I understand that. It, you know, and it's just, it's like fresh legs. I mean, that's
absolutely
kind of the best way to put it.
Yeah.
So you feel going against the Ravens, how do you think this matchup works, you know, as far as the backs against? This is a team that run deep. Their defense overall is really good.
Yeah, they're good, but this is a team you got to run at. I mean, you can't run around. You got to run straight in the mouth. I know the offensive line is maybe struggling a little bit, but I think that, you know, this is a game where you can set the identity of your team. So you know what? We're going to run the ball. We're going to run through your lips, and we dare you to stop us. And I think if they get that kind of tenacity, I mean, I think they definitely can do it. But you better believe they got some dudes on here. They got Pierce. They got Washington. These guys can play now. So these ain't no scrubs. But at the end of the day, you got to run through somebody's lips. And I think this is the perfect game, physical game, that you can run through somebody's lips.
Yeah, and that turf, that playing surface is going to be interesting. It just kills me. I was talking to Kevin Byard about it on Wednesday. It amazes me. So this stadium, they have grass there.
Oh, they have grass?
They have grass. But when the NFL goes there, they put like a rubber surface over the grass, and then they roll out turf onto the grass.
They don't want to care about the soccer, right?
I don't know, man. But you know, when the teams over there come here, they get to play on grass. Like it's dictated that they play on grass. I don't get it.
They love their grass. I don't know.
I don't know. What was the worst surface you played at? Was it the Astrodome or was it the Vet?
Oh, even when you say it just hurts my heart. Astrodome, Pittsburgh. Cincinnati, that's when they had that turf like it rubbed.
The same, but they were all the same, yeah.
It was that hard turf with metal at the bottom. I mean, I got skinned up and hurt knees and, you know, getting turf burns. And, you know, my rookie season, I didn't think I was going to finish, man, because, you know, it got so bad that my bursa sac busted in both of my elbows. I had turf burns on that. I was bleeding in my bed. And I'm like, man, is this the NFL, man? I don't want this.
Yeah, those strawberries that you get, oh, man, like, ooh.
Boo, my shower lasted like 14 seconds. Yeah. I don't even think I washed.
Well, you know, now they have the things you could wear, like to cover your arms and stuff like that. That's crazy. It's funny you mentioned Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, because you had Riverfront, Three Rivers Stadium, and Vet Stadium. They were all essentially the same place, man.
And Phillies was bad. Yeah, Phillies felt like we were playing in somebody's driveway.
Yeah, that's Vet Stadium. Oh, yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
I got the biggest strawberry in Philly, man. I'm like, what are we doing? I mean, I'm diving for balls and getting skinned up. And it's just amazing that a lot more people didn't get hurt because that surface was awful, TD.
Yeah, well, you had, I think it was Willie Davis.
Yeah, Willie.
Willie Davis, he tried to field a punt and hit both his knees, man. He shredded them both. It's crazy.
I know. And then what was the safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers that tore both his knees? Rod Woodson.
Rod Woodson, yeah.
He tore both his knees trying to tackle Barry Sanders. Yo,
that wasn't right.
Yeah. Not one of them, both of them. Yeah. That's a noise you make. I'm not laughing at that. I'm just
the noise, yeah.
The noise. I'm never laughing. He got hurt, never. But I'm just saying the noise, yeah.
There was a video, the lineman, I think he was from Jacksonville. Somebody put a move on him. He was like,
"Oh, yeah. yeah. He was mic'd up, dude. I would want that over and over."
that was hilarious, man.
Oh my goodness.
Treylon Burks was out on Wednesday. I'm not sure. What do you think is up with him?
I don't know, but you know, you're talking about a good player, a great player that has a chance, that has the ability to go make some plays. But we know in this league that if you're not available, it's not going to mean anything. I think, and you know, we can't help it. We don't know what's happening. We know it's a knee, but we don't know the severity of it. And some people can tolerate pain more than others. But at the end of the day, he's got to figure out a way to make sure he stays on the field and make sure he can be an impact player in this offense. Because just imagine him and Hopkins and Moore on the field at the same time with those guys playing well. I mean, that's a dangerous combination. You got Chig, you got Henry, then you got Kyle Phillips, you got all those guys that are capable of making plays. But when you're a guy that has all the ability in the world, it's kind of like having you've been a Rolls Royce car, but your wheels are on flat. You may look good, but you're not going anywhere. And that's exactly kind of what the situation happened, and I say that respectfully.
What is it going to take to get Chig and Kyle going?
I mean, they got to. I think Tim Kelly's going to have to figure out a way to get him the ball. I mean, the reason why he's probably standing in and blocking a lot of times because he's protecting those tackles. But I mean, I think last week he had 3 for 29. I mean, that's okay. But at the end of the day, when you're an explosive player, you know, you got to get it. But I don't care if it's a reverse. I don't care if it's a speed sweep, something to get the ball in his hand, because when he gets the ball in his hand, he can make something happen.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what happens over there across the pond. Ravens and Titans. I don't know, man. It could get ugly because that defense is. I mean, yeah, they haven't given up a red zone touchdown in quite some time. I think what, 3 games?
Yeah.
It's
but they're in the same situation we're in. Their offense is struggling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they got a couple of receivers out. I don't know if OBJ's playing. Bateman's kind of banged up. So, you know, it's kind of like the same situation, but the team that makes the least amount of mistakes is going to win.
Yeah, all those drops are included in the mistakes. They had 9 last week.
9 drops, that's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. But man, we'll see what happened. Oh, you got a story for me?
Yeah. I do, man. I was watching Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, man.
me and my daughter was watching it, and we looking at it. We're like, oh, this is a good movie. All of a sudden, this guy comes on the picture. We're like, who's that? That's Morgan Freeman. I'm like, yeah. She's like, if that ain't TD? I'm like, no, baby, that's Morgan Freeman.
Well, it was a dark day on the we're out on that note.
Appreciate you, Doc.
This is Chico Conquo, and I'm talking with TD.
Yeah. I'm in London. I like to go and shop at the mall. Shop at the
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. We are going to go across the pond. You know, I wanted to take the trip, but hey, as long as one of the two of us go, and my guy, ESPN NFL Nation Ravens reporter Jameson Hensley is there in London, and he's set to go. Jameson, the Ravens decided to go way earlier than they did last year, or the last time they were in London. What was really behind the decision to do that?
Yeah, because 6 years ago, the Ravens made their first overseas trip as a franchise, came to London, played the Jacksonville Jaguars. And when they came out in 2017, they flew after their Thursday practice, got here early Friday. They didn't even go to the hotel. They basically just dropped their bags off, didn't even go to the rooms, went right to the practice field. And, you know, there's about 7 players from that team. And I talked to them this past week, and they were just saying, they were just dead. They were falling asleep in meetings, things like that. And so John Harbaugh, and as a result, they lost 44-7 to the Jaguars that year, which is the largest margin of defeat under John Harbaugh. So now, 6 years later, get another chance to go overseas. And as John Harbaugh said, you know what? It went so badly the last time. They're going to do the extreme opposite. Instead of going the latest you can to get to London, now they're going the earliest. They actually looked into, because they played in Pittsburgh on Sunday, they actually looked into flying directly from Pittsburgh to London to get there as fast as possible. They couldn't make that happen. So instead, Monday morning, which was about less than 12 hours after they came back from Pittsburgh, they were on the plane again heading to London, just because they want to make sure their whole body clock is in tune with London time. They just felt like they were jet lag, and their whole, you know, sleep patterns were so thrown off the last time. They want to go out early and make sure everybody is on London time by kickoff on Sunday.
Wow, that's really making sure that everything is right. And I get it. You know, yeah, you have that extreme, and you want to make sure that, you know, you don't have any setbacks. Now, I know the Titans, so they go, as you mentioned, they're flying Thursday overnight into Friday. They're practicing at the Grove Hotel in Watford. Where are the Ravens practicing? So I guess, you know, even like with this whole thing, as far as them being there so early, they have to have facilities to use, weights, training, et cetera, et cetera. Where are they doing all that?
They're going to be at the Tottenham Football Club out here. At their facility, and the game is going to be played at Tottenham Stadium, but the Ravens are going to be all week at the Tottenham facility, and so they're going to be practicing there Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, have their walkthrough. Really, they've transported their whole operations, football operations, over to where it's like their facility for the week. And what has helped them out is that all of the soccer here, all the Premier League teams, they're on their international break, so they're not practicing at their facility. So it's wide open for the whole week, and so the Ravens are out there. They're going to be practicing. They're going to have meetings. Everything they would do normally in Owings Mills, Maryland, for the whole week, instead, they're going to do it here in London.
Unbelievable. So looking at the roster and everything that's going on, well, let's get into these receivers because, I watched the Steelers game, and it's just like, come on now. What was the general vibe in the locker room after the game, you know, with so many drops, Nelson Agholor, Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers even? What was the vibe there?
Stunned. And because they had this year – they went to Cincinnati, beat Cincinnati. They went to Cleveland, they had it in their mind that they were going to go and go 3-0 on the road in the AFC North. And they felt like they had more talent than the Pittsburgh Steelers. They felt like they had a game plan that they were going to beat the Steelers with. And just all of the mistakes, from the drop passes to his worst throw maybe of the whole year was on this fade in the end zone to Odell Beckham Jr. that got picked off. You had a fumble by Justice Hill. I mean, every mistake you can make, a coaching kind of error where late in the first half, they should have stressed to their center, Tyler Linderbaum, do not snap the ball at any circumstances. And he did because he thought the guy, one of the Steelers players, had jumped offside. So that thwarted a 40-yard field goal attempt for Justin Tucker. But again, when you went into that locker room in Pittsburgh, you just saw every player just sitting at their locker room, silent, just kind of staring, thinking of all the mistakes they made and that had cost them in that game. And they felt like maybe just one or two of those mistakes, if they didn't make them, they would have won that game. But then when you put all of the multitudes together, that's why they lost 17-10.
Wow. And we're talking to ESPN NFL Nation Ravens reporter Jameson Hensley. Jameson, Odell Beckham Jr., what is his situation? Is he someone who can expect to play this weekend, or is it still week to week?
I think he's going to play. I don't think he's 100%, and I don't know how long it's going to take him to get back up to speed. When I saw him in training camp, I was surprised by how well he was running, catching the ball, everything. I mean, he seemed like, I wouldn't say he was going to be the number one receiver, because I think Zay Flowers, everyone who was at training camp kind of noticed that Zay Flowers was the most talented receiver on this team. But I thought Odell Beckham Jr. was going to make some kind of impact. And it was about, what is it? His fifth quarter of the year, it was in Cincinnati. First quarter in Cincinnati, he injured his ankle, and that just kind of really just his whole season has kind of gone off the rails a little bit. And he came back this past week, wasn't used as much. And again, I think he's still dealing with that ankle injury. He's going to try to play, but you just don't know how much he's going to be able to participate. And the Ravens gave him $15 million over this past year. They understood that he wasn't going to be this all-pro Odell Beckham Jr., that he was his leadership, what he was going to be able to do as far as showing their commitment to getting a receiver for Lamar in the offseason. All of that played into why they overspent for Odell Beckham Jr., but I think everybody who has seen him, OBJ, this year would agree that they expected more at this point in the season than what he has been able to give them. And I think, you know, there's a frustration level just because I think he still feels he has something left in the tank. But so far, we just haven't seen it.
Wow. As far as Lamar Jackson is concerned, in this new offense, I mean, it's like finally we're expecting him to be able to break free from the limitations that Greg Roman and knows everything. We don't have to get into all that. But with Todd Monken coming in, how has Lamar Jackson settled into this offense? Is it showcasing him?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying. It's been up and down. I mean, you've seen the best of him up in Cincinnati, where I thought that was one of his best games in recent memory. Even in Cleveland, in that second half, I mean, Lamar took over. But there's too many times where it's just been so inconsistent, even with everybody around him as well, where it's just, I think what we have seen the biggest difference when you look at Todd Monken offense compared to Greg Roman is they get out of that huddle very quickly. They allow Lamar to get up to the line. They allow him to look over, and if he wants to change a play, he can. And then when the ball is snapped, he gets rid of the ball quickly. And everything is so much more up-tempo under Todd Monken than under Greg Roman. I think that's kind of the biggest little wrinkle right now that we've seen in this new offense.
Yeah, and he looks a little more comfortable throwing the ball. There was that one, yeah, I think it was like third and 18, and he scrambled, and he stopped, and Zay Flowers kind of moved with him, and he hit him. I was like, okay, that's the next level quarterback, and so it's good to see that from him. But when you flip it to the other side, Marlon Humphrey, right? He gave up that game-winning touchdown pass. Well, it put Pittsburgh ahead. George Pickens had to catch. How do you think he's going to bounce back?
Yeah, Marlon's a very tough, as far as mentally tough guy, and I think he will be able. There's certain players that might linger in their head a little bit. I think he'll be able to bounce back. I just don't know physically again where he's at. I mean, this was his first game he's played all year. He had in middle of August he had foot surgery, and I just don't know. It's tough when the defense is in the house and Marlon Humphrey is, you know, any corner going one-on-one with George Pickens on the outside, it's tough to contain him.
Yeah.
And so, but I think a fully healthy Marlon Humphrey had a much better chance of hanging with George Pickens than what we saw with Humphrey. There were times in that game where you could tell, and again, not at full strength to the point where he was taking a knee during timeouts and just to kind of give himself a little bit more of a breather. So I think towards the end, they were kind of pushing his snap count maybe over the edge for him a little bit in his first game of the season. I will really like to see maybe in this game against in London where maybe they try to reduce his snaps a little bit more and get a much more, you know, productive Marlon Humphrey. I think this is a situation where fewer snaps might produce a better Marlon Humphrey on Sunday.
Gotcha. Law of diminishing returns.
Yes.
For that defense as a whole, we know the history of the Baltimore Ravens. It's always, you know, Ray Lewis, Terrell Suggs, Ed Reed. We could go on and on. C.J. Mosley, right? Hello, Tinata. This team is built on defense. Is that still the case with them?
It is. And it really, I mean, they take their lead from Roquan Smith. And he is a fiery leader. And up until that game-winning touchdown that they allowed to George Pickens, up until that point, they had gone 10 quarters without allowing a touchdown. Mm. And so this is a very stingy group. And so I think, you know, this defense, they know that this offense is up and down, up and down. But overall, I think the most consistent part of this Ravens team has been their defense. And it really, you go back to, it was Halloween of last year when the Ravens traded for Roquan Smith. Since that time, so we're talking about the middle of last year, since that time, I think Roquan has played 15 games with them. The Ravens have held teams to 13 points per game. That is best in the NFL. And they love to say that's the Roquan Smith effect.
Wow. He came in and definitely has done his thing. That whole defense,
yes,
it's fun to watch. You know, he and Patrick Queen. And now Clowney is in there, too. We'll see what he has left. I want to flip it back just real quick to the Tottenham Spurs, the stadium itself. I don't know if you got to talk to the players because I know access is a little bit different. But in hearing some of the things that the Bills players said about the surface and how it caused some injuries and things like that, have you gotten any feedback from any of the Ravens players about that?
No, I just know that when they played at Wembley 6 years ago, there was a player who's still on the team, defensive end, Brent Urban, a backup defensive end. He suffered a Liz Frank injury on that field. He feels It was because of that field, that surface, that caused that injury. So they know when you're playing outside the United States, you're playing on even when you're playing at MetLife too, people have some problems with that one. Yeah. But it's also when you go outside the country, playing surfaces are just not the same. They're not to the standard of what the NFL wants. Playing on soccer compared to what they want for soccer and what they want for football, it's just totally different. And so I know anytime they play out kind of outside the box, outside their normal NFL stadiums, that's always a concern.
Yeah, that's really interesting to see how that plays out, especially at this stadium, which supposedly has multiple playing surfaces. They have a grass for soccer, and then they have this turf for football. It's strange, but we'll see what happens. Either way, enjoy the game. Are you going to get some fish and chips out there?
I will. I'll find some time to do that. Yeah, in between I think I've been told it's going to be an hour bus ride to practice, an hour bus ride back from practice. So a lot of time on the bus here in London.
Well, maybe you could take the tunnel. Hopefully that'd be faster. That's train. But either way, man,
there you go.
Good times out there. I know you're going to have them, man. I appreciate you coming on and be safe, man.
Thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
All right, for sure. So that was Jameson Hensley, ESPN NFL Nation Ravens reporter. Appreciate the insight from him. Look at things a lot differently now, a better understanding of why the Ravens did end up traveling on Monday. I thought it was crazy he said that they were going to go right there from Pittsburgh. But either way, they're there. The Titans are there. Hopefully some of you are there, and it's going to be a great opportunity to see two teams that are very similar. So definitely looking forward to that. Appreciate the guys jumping on, I almost said Derrick Henry. No, Chris Sanders, Jameson Hensley. Appreciate David James over here making it happen.
Yes, sir.
And above all else, man, appreciate each of you for continuing to rock with us. Definitely, if you haven't found us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, search Talking With TD, go ahead and subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you. We're out of here.